Welcome to A Call Across the Pond, Transforming Relationships at School, at Home, and Beyond, with Kara Gretton and Vicki Etzebag. Thank you for bringing us into your day. We're very grateful for our special guest today, Carolyn Albanese, who will speak with us about mental health, well-being, and how cultural stigma can impact relationships. With over 25 years of experience in the education sector, Carolyn Albanese has worked in secondary schools throughout the Toronto, Ontario area as head of departments of modern languages and guidance and career education, and as a school administrator. Carolyn is a passionate mental health and well-being advocate, supporting various projects and activities that aim to explore equity, anti-oppression, and human rights, and that destigmatize mental health and trauma. Carolyn has worked extensively in supporting students and their families as co-chair of the York Region District School Board's Equity Committee on Policy Review, and is currently an education officer at the Ministry of Education of Ontario, where she supports teacher candidates and is a provincial co-lead of the Indigenous Education, Mental Health and Wellbeing, and Inclusive Education portfolios. Carolyn is very active in policy development to support anti-racism in various school boards. She holds a PhD from the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education on Learning and Higher Adult Education. In addition to her day job, Carolyn mentors women who have fled domestic abuse, as well as women who are pursuing graduate studies. Carolyn enjoys playing the piano and drums, as well as hiking and traveling with her family in her spare time and visiting her family in Italy. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you, Tara. What a great opportunity it is to be here today. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to talk to us. Yeah, just listening to that bio, I'm just so excited. Well, I'd read it before as well, but just so excited to have this conversation with you and so interested to hear more about your work.
Thank you.
Carolyn, you've been a lifelong advocate of mental health and well-being. What has led you to this advocacy?
Thanks for the question, Vicki. I think it's a great question. I think when thinking about that, what has led me to the to this advocacy and you know, my passion in terms of mental health has really been my lifelong personal experience with mental health. Lots of things that I'm at a point in my life now that I'm learning or I've learned that I didn't know then. And so, you know, one of the things that I've come to understand in, you know, in life experiences is that communication is so important in relationships. And I think we would all agree it's foundational. And one of the other things I've learned in my experiences is that in general, humans are maybe not so good at communicating. We think we are, but in actuality, we're not. So what I mean by that is, for example, I've experienced many times where people have ignored me or used the silent treatment as a way for me to infer that they are communicating, that they are upset. I've experienced adults having temper tantrums or flare-ups as a way to communicate anger. So there's an emotion behind what they're trying to communicate. I've experienced folks screaming and yelling in front of me, and it could be anywhere, as a way to get attention on a matter and make a statement. So during the pandemic, in grocery stores, people's patience was taxed or worn thin. These are just a couple of examples. And so while sometimes it left me confused trying to figure out and discern what's going on here, and it's not really helping the situation, what I'm seeing, at the end of the day, people are trying to communicate something. So I wanted to shine a light on communication, coupled with mental health, because in my many, many experiences with people, I think in many cases, some folks were dealing with stress or depression, mental illness, or poor mental health on that given day. So, and just to cycle back a bit, we all have mental health. So what I'm trying to say is that we all have it. Talking about it growing up didn't happen, but we all had it, just like we have physical health. So what I do as part of my daily routine when I get up in the morning, and even when I go to bed, is I think to myself, I give myself a 0 to 5 scale. How am I feeling physically? Okay, five would be like top notch. And how am I feeling mentally? Right. And that's just one of the things I do to normalize, even among my friends and family, that it's okay to talk about and think about mental health. So what's led me to this work really is about communication and my experiences in life and understanding how mental health impacts us all and how we can try to better understand and better communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And because it impacts our relationships. And I've read your book, Vicky, and, you know, on relation spaces and just thinking about how communication is so important and to work at that and how people may be dealing with things behind the scenes, so to speak, we're not thinking about. I've also had lots of experience as a high school guidance counselor, as a school administrator, aside from my personal life, that's informed my thinking and research on mental health and thinking about things like the global pandemic, the lockdowns, the lack of contact during that time in terms of socialization, death. I lost a few people to COVID in Italy, as an example. So how that impacted people in my life, illness, it had on all of us around the world. It united us in grief and how difficult it's been for a lot of people to kind of climb out of that, mm-hmm. among other things. There's so much I could speak about too, global strife, conflict. So, you know, and it really makes us think about communication. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Carolyn. There's so much within what you said that is just so powerful. And yeah, the importance of communication, you know, and I think particularly that, you know, knowing and understanding that everybody has mental health. Yeah. Yeah. And that those sort of interactions that we might have with people when they're challenging, that, you know, there's something behind that. Yeah. And yeah, that really resonates with me. And I think about that a lot in my interactions or with children, young people in the education environment. Right. So I'm just really curious about, you talk about, you know, what you now know. Mm-hmm. And through your own life experiences, I'm just really curious what you now know about mental health and about communication. What would you say to your younger self?
That's a great question, Tara. What I would say to my younger self, that's an excellent question. There's a lot of things that I experienced growing up, seeing, understanding, and knowing through narrative and storytelling, that I would say to myself, just stay the course and be true to yourself. And if you're having something like, you know, a gut feeling that something needs to be addressed, you're likely right on that. Whereas everyone else around you may be wagging a finger to tell you otherwise. That it's important to really recognize one's own, you know, you're tuned to yourself. And that mental health is real, and that it does impact relationships. If I can, I just want to tell you a little bit about some of those experiences, if that's okay, really brought me to this point that I would say to my younger self, to your question, Tara, the why, what I've learned. So I'm a second generation Italian Canadian, and most of my family is still living in southern Italy, so Calabria and Sicily, which in the country itself are poorer areas. They're not as developed, let's say, as what we might know as Milan or Turin, the more developed cities, urban cities, I should say. My grandparents left southern Italy right after the war, World War II, because of extreme poverty and lack of opportunity. There was no infrastructure. So my grandmother, while she was in Italy, had worked as a nanny on the other side of the region where she was born, where she had lived. And she worked for a very loving and wealthy family. However, she had 9 siblings and there was abject extreme poverty. So some of her sisters would take a train on the weekend and visit her, and my grandmother would give them food. And the family was fine with that. They were a very benevolent and loving family. They knew the extreme poverty that was going on at the time. So they were fine with this arrangement. But it just showed me when I heard, these are oral traditions and stories that they would tell me growing up, just to paint the picture of what they were dealing with. So poverty was very high, no work. And so, you know, they left. My grandmother, my grandfather, my uncle, and my mom, they came to Canada and settled in Toronto, in the thick of where a lot of Italians were immigrating at the time. And so my grandfather quickly found work driving an upholstery truck. And that was a thing. That was a job back then, was delivering upholstered furniture. So another thing, and I don't know if this would be familiar to anyone, but it certainly is to me. It's a very visual, indelible image in my head. He would deliver furniture that was wrapped in plastic, like permanently wrapped in plastic.
One of those in her living room.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it resonates. Because a lot of people were coming from the poor class and they were just starting to work and earn some money. So for them, buying a piece of furniture, like a lamp or a sofa, they would cover it in plastic. So they would preserve these newly acquired items that were considered like precious gems in a way, once upon a time, unattainable objects. I found this just to be wild, but this is what was going on. So my grandmother stayed home as a homemaker, which was very typical at the time, taking care of my mom and my uncle. And, you know, they were trying to kind of, you know, ease their way out of the poor class and work, make an honest living. Until one day, a streetcar T-boned my grandfather's truck. And all the glass went into his eyes, and he immediately lost his vision.
Oh, wow.
For the rest of his life. He could no longer work. So my grandmother, which was a little atypical, she went to work. So she was the breadwinner at a time when it was usually the men. And so she worked at a slip and garment factory downtown Toronto where women used to wear slips. So for the young listeners out there, look that up. I know we have Spanx and all that and those sorts of things and Skims. But if you look up garments, undergarments like slips, those are the sorts of things that women would wear under their skirts and other things like, you know, bras and panties and things like that. So my grandmother went to work, and despite the poverty and disability, they tried to stay as resourceful as possible. Mm-hmm. And resilient, trying to find the joys of everyday life in the country, you know, hanging out with Italians who spoke the language, who ate the same foods, that sort of, you know, they were homesick, but tried to find those comforts, buying Italian foods, preserving things, and trying to keep those traditions they were bringing from the country. So I just want to shine a light that, you know, around the time all this was happening, my uncle, you know, was a year younger than my mom. And as he was growing up, there was some sort of troubling behaviors that were exhibiting, perhaps suggesting there were some other issues at play. So anger outbursts I had heard about, violence and harming animals. The response to that would be incarceration, right? So at the time when we suspected, and I was witness to some of this growing up as well, I wanted to add, it wasn't just before I was born. We weren't allowed to say, hey, do you think there's something going on, like mental health, and this needs to be thought about?
Right.
So the response, yeah, the response was the police.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and he would disappear out of our lives for years at a time. We didn't really know why. So what I would tell my younger self is, you know, and I was picking up these sort of, you know, patterns and saying to the family, do we need to kind of help him? Is maybe there's something going on? And I really think he was suffering. I really do. However, I come from a culture, and this story is not unique, by the way, nor is my situation or my experience or my culture, but coming from a culture where we weren't really allowed to talk about this. So the response would be, we would bail him out each and every time there was trouble. And, you know, I thought it was interesting because if someone wasn't feeling well physically, there was lots of talk in the house about, you know, we need to see the doctor, or ask the doctor to see a specialist. That was attended to immediately. But anything to deal with mental health, and I don't want you to think I'm trying to be silly here, but I look back and it was a little bit funny. If we talked about it, it would be met with like a lasagna or like spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah. Comfort food. Yeah. Comfort food.
Feed it.
Yeah. Feed the problem. Here, sit, be quiet, pass the cheese and have some wine. We were not to talk about any problems at all. So there's a lot of stigma, a lot of stigma associated with talking about mental health was quite remarkable. And I thought it was just, you know, my situation, my family, but it continued even when I was working as a professional, as a guidance counselor. And Vicky and I go way back working together as guidance counselors, supporting students in high school settings. And, you know, we work a lot with various social identities. I wanted to just sort of, you know, go on to the side that, you know, fast forward decades later, and supporting our 2S LGBTQ plus students and stigma. I was just overwhelmed with the stigma in talking about supporting their mental health. These are students who rarely attended school. They were afraid.
Yeah.
Safety was an issue. Their needs were not being met. And they needed supports at a time. There were few resources where we worked in a rural kind of area of a region. So, you know, mental health is there with everyone. So what's interesting, growing up in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, you know, and I'd see this with friends. We go out for dinners and talk about travel and food and, you know, our plans, goals. And of course, every decade that went on, those goals would be different, or what we would talk about, like maybe marriage, maybe not, maybe divorce, maybe kids. Like, we were all going through different things. And now that I'm older, we talk about our physical ailments as we age. Who's your specialist? Who's your chiropractor? My hip is out of whack. I think I have bursitis. And but there's still some hesitancy to talk about mental health. So I would say to my younger self that there are people who I think may be suffering trauma. And what we have in front of us, and folks in front of us, even at work, may be really just trying to keep it together. So to enter lightly into those spaces and to, you know, really think about even what's not shared or said, there could be some pieces there. Needless to say, I was worried about my uncle, going back to him. And we weren't allowed to talk about it. At one point, as I was a teenager, he assaulted a friend of mine and put the friend in hospital. Another, you know, police visit. Yeah. So it was the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think it's important. I would tell my younger self as well, Tara, to really talk about mental health. And even though we're not psychologists, we can't solve the problem. We can listen. I find often as well, I would tell my younger self, really think carefully about the bias that has informed our thinking about mental health, the poor taste jokes growing up that I would hear, the snide terms used to address, you know, things that they thought there was a mental illness at play. What was representation of mental health in the media or perhaps on TV? Or in culture and society. Generally, it was a poor representation. And if I look back at movies I watched or things that I read, usually, the situation was dire, it was negative, not a good outcome. And I want to share an acronym if I could. And I think part of it is that we're nice. N-I-C-E, we're nice. We're not inclined to critically examine. And that plays part of the bias, I think, with everything. We can talk about that and apply that to ability or disability, racism, oppression. We're not inclined to critically examine. We've received thousands and thousands of messages. We just sort of don't even think about it, and it shapes our thinking. So I would also say that to my younger self. Be careful and really critically examine what you're hearing about mental health, what you're absorbing, because we need to critically think about that.
Wow, again, so much that you said is just so powerful and so important, and I love that acronym. Thank you.
I love that. It's not inclined to critically
examine.
I think, and it's also, you know, we're raised with a certain mindset, we develop with a certain mindset, and sometimes it's difficult to stretch our thinking beyond that. Right. And so how capable are we of examining other people's perspectives, other people's realities? Right. So much a part of that. I wanted to ask you, Carolyn, to take a moment to think about a specific interaction mm-hmm. that you had with someone mm-hmm. and that stands out as having had a pivotal impact on you. Can you tell us about that?
A pivotal impact on me, like in terms of my mental health, Vicky, like something to that effect, or?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's been lots of, sort of throughout my life, because I really do think life is a series of experiences that really give rise to how you felt in that moment, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, when I got married, that was one of my all-time, like, it was a great feeling, like a great stress to plan it, but it was a great feeling. And that was like, pivotal. So I think life is just, it's almost like a, you watch that film projector of a series of just experiences, and you will always remain with that indelible feeling, that visceral feeling of how that experience or situation made you feel. I think I'm gonna mention two. One would be when I was in my 20s, a really, really bad breakup after a long time dating someone. And I was betrayed, and he moved on with my best friend. And so that, when you just don't expect it.
Yeah.
And I think it really opened my eyes to better, like, started my journey in a way of communication. And maybe the signs were there and we didn't see them, but the way we were communicating in that time, at that point in our lives, in our 20s, again, we're still developing and growing, and the lack of communication or the way it was done was something to be thought about. That was pivotal for me. That was like an aha, a big aha, capital A aha. Mm-hmm. And another is when my mom was ill, and again, this culture and stigma was still going on. They wouldn't talk about, mental health. My mom suffered from depression, but she required a liver transplant, which she never got. We were not matches. It's like a really bad version of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Someone's liver was too small, someone was too fatty, and mine was just not right. So unfortunately, she passed on. But to the pivotal aha moment is realizing I have two parents who are refusing to address their mental health. And that's the culture of stigma many, many years later, after I'm in my 40s at this point. And so much so my dad got caregiver burnout and was coping by drinking excessive amounts of alcohol and taking copious amount of prescription pills.
Yeah.
Several times we had to call the ambulance. And so that's a pivotal moment where, that's interesting, because their way of communicating or dealing with things definitely is not a healthy outlet, but it makes sense now because that's what they know. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't allowed to be talked mm-hmm. about. If I would bring it up, absolutely not. So those were some pivotal moments in my life. Aha moments, as you would say, maybe, Vicky, that really gave me pause for thought on how communication was one thing. And then this just that we go on in life, and there's just certain things that people will be resistant mm-hmm. to want to get on board with and understand. And it does impact relationships. It does.
Yeah.
Such is life.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can, again, I'm saying it again because there is so much that you're saying that I really kind of resonate with. But my family's, I'm second generation Irish, and I'm not making a statement here that all Irish people have issues with alcohol, but my father was an alcoholic mm-hmm. and it took his life. But, mm-hmm. I know that from his experiences of his very challenging upbringing, and that he never spoke about his mental health. Never did. That
makes complete sense to me, Tara. Yeah.
And it wasn't, kind to gently invite these types of conversations was met with immense resistance. And alcohol, as he would describe himself, was to obliterate. So going back to your acronym of acne, I can't speak. Yes, what you were saying about nice, not inclined right. to critically assess. I suppose yeah. what I'm curious about is how do we gently invite that? How do we do that? How do we, mm-hmm. you know, open that up to the next generation? How do we do it?
The excellent question. All these are really great questions, by the way. Thank you so much, giving me a lot of food for thought. I think, Tara, to your question, how do we invite this in? It's two-pronged for me, and this is just my opinion, and everything I'm saying here is just based on my experiences and opinions. I think it's a matter of really making the space just for oneself to think about our relationship, so my relationship with mental health. How do I feel about that term? Do I let it in? Do I embrace it? Do I support myself first? Do I engage in something called self-care? Perhaps some of us have heard about this. Doing things on a regular basis for yourself to really, really support our mental health. That's self-care. I mean, getting my nails done or getting a facial could be a form of self-care, but it's the everyday things, putting yourself first, whether it is doing meditation or some stretches or go for a walk, that just kind of clears the mind. That could be self-care. So what are you doing? What's a person doing vis-a-vis self-care? And another way to look at it is, if you've ever been on a plane, and I would imagine many of the listeners here have been on a plane, taken a plane ride somewhere. We know that before the plane takes off, we have to watch these safety videos, right? Or you have the staff doing the whole rigmarole of, you know, if there's an emergency, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that they talk about is the oxygen mask. So I think about it like this, that if an oxygen mask falls down, they always say, put it on you first before you help the person next to you. And I really think self-care and mental health, you have to think about taking care of yourself first, or you'll be no good to anybody in a way. And it's okay. It's not selfish. It's not a selfish thing to do. Many of us perhaps have been raised with these messages of that it would be selfish, that it's a selfish thing to do. We have to do all these other things for everybody else. And, you know, self-care could also be, or you know, practicing good mental health could include things like practicing gratitude. And one thing I do is I think of glimmers. I'm not sure if we've heard of that. Glimmers are the opposite of triggers. And a glimmer is just an everyday moment in my life, even if I've had a really bad day. And there's been bad days. We all have them. But even a micro moment, a glimmer that has made me feel some joy or peace or gratitude, I practice that. I try to go for walks. I set boundaries with technology. And that's a harder one, because that requires me making a decision where someone else will be impacted. So for example, Tara, if you were to call me and say, I really want to FaceTime with you for 6 hours, but I only have 30. Okay, now I know I'm exaggerating here, though it would be a pleasure to FaceTime. And it's me saying, you know what, I've only got 30 minutes today. I really do have to attend to other things, right? Same thing with these, you know, workplace and balancing a whole bunch of things that, you know, obviously they require technology, and setting those boundaries with people to make them understand that, you know, you're trying to strike a balance. Mm-hmm. So there's that. It's thinking about, you know, oneself. It's also thinking about how can we support each other. So now I'm going to take the prong and make it a second prong. Listening, just listening to people. We're not psychologists, as I said before. You know, most of us aren't. We didn't really necessarily study this in school. But it's easy to just listen without judgment, and not listening to give advice, but just to listen to validate someone's feelings so they don't feel dismissed in how they're feeling. I might think something that they're sharing is, you know, priority is very low and it's not a big deal. But to that person, something that happened, that experience, that feeling I talked about earlier is a big deal. So just to, you know, listen and stay calm with our voices and keep a positive tone. I would also hearken to say, you know, to be very careful when using humor, because if someone's in a vulnerable place to share something, which is a privilege, I think, to have someone open up and want to share something, maybe about their mental health, humor can come across sometimes from being dismissive or making fun of a situation. Again, dismissing that person's feelings. We want to avoid that. And finally, if you want to broach in supporting someone, broach a conversation. This is hard, having, you know, maybe a hard conversation, is to just really be at a place where there's no distractions. The phone's not going to go off. People aren't going to distract you every minute. And just to be clear on what you've observed. It's nothing personal. We're not personalizing it about the person, but just about, listen, I've noticed that, you know, at the last few places, events we've gone to, the last few brunches, you haven't come, you haven't responded in the chat. Is everything okay? That's all. Something as simple as that. And if the person doesn't want to answer, that's okay. They may not be ready, but they know that you care. And maybe at that point, that's all that matters. So that would be my takeaways.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn. You know, that coming forward, coming forth and providing a person with an opportunity to explain themselves and to provide you with some insight of what they may or may not be going through, giving them that space to do that. You know, it just happened to me recently, where I sensed that from a friend and that she was upset about something. And I knew it. I knew it in my mind and in my heart, but I was just going to walk away from it. But I thought, no, this is not something. I want to just check in. I want to just check in and see if everything's okay. And so I gave her a call and I said, hey, just want to check, because I kind of sensed from you a certain amount of discomfort. And I want to make sure that you're all right. And if not, then I want to be able to talk about it with you. And, you know, we had a wonderful conversation, because she had that space, she had that voice to be able to express herself. What I'm hearing so much from your message, Carolyn, is that you are a person who motivates voice. You have inspired your own voice over the years, and you motivate voice in others. What is a message that you would like to give to people, that people can walk away with today? Something that can inspire them in their own mental health and well-being and in their own relationships?
Thanks, Vicky. That's awfully kind and gracious. Thank you so much. So what's a message that I could share? And it's taken me an awful long time to get there in my life, but to realize, and I want to share that not all wounds are obvious. And I mentioned this a little earlier on in the podcast, that there are many people who walk among us, who we work with, who are family or friends, who are dealing perhaps quietly, or not dealing with at all, their own suffering or trauma or confusion or just feeling sad about something. And they don't feel that there's necessarily a safe space to share because they fear that the relationship will change, perhaps at work, or people will exclude them. Because keep in mind that where mental health and mental illness are concerned, the response to this in the past has always been either the police would respond to it, or there'd be exclusion. You know, we would see in movies or read about, you know, people would be silenced, quieted. And as you mentioned about voice, Vicky, you know, I've tried for decades to bring this attention to family, and it would be scuttled away and quieted. And I would just share that, just to be present. And if, again, if you're feeling something in your stomach, those butterflies, like you did with your friend, and you had that feeling. I really can't quantify what that's called, Vicky, but you had that feeling and you just knew you wanted to reach out and connect, that to continue to do so You know, just to reach out, to be a friendly, non-judgmental ear, and, you know, to connect people with resources if they ask, because sometimes folks don't even know where to start. But I think at the very end of it all, underpinning this all, is just to have folks understand their voices are valid if they're going through something. They won't be shunned or excluded. There's nothing wrong with them. We're not going to diagnose them. That's not what we do. We're friends. Mm-hmm. Or we're just concerned colleagues, for example. And we can be a friendly ear. Now, if more support's needed, then that's, you know, a different conversation to help that person perhaps get that support. But just the fact they know, Vicky, your friend knows that you cared enough to reach out, is very, very important. That's that's a great step. Yeah.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Yes, it's interesting. Makes think that early this morning I went out with a couple of friends for breakfast, and one of the friends started to share something that was a worry that she had, and she became quite emotional and became then very apologetic. And, you know, and it was, you know, the other friend and I going, no, we wanted to, you know, we were so pleased that she felt that she could share this. And then, you know, and I suppose so kind of building on what you said, that when you do take that step, you know, if someone reached out, well, you do share that it's okay. And just, and not, there is no, you know, there's no need to feel guilty. It's so important to be able to reach out to your friends. You know, there's no need to apologize.
No, there isn't. And to your point, like, I'm wondering, like, I think the relationship, like, or the friendship just really deepens when a person's able to do that. It becomes, it's on a level of being genuine. And, you know, I think about folks who are able to, you know, hold their truth and share it, how great the relationship, not great their situation, that's not what I'm saying, but it really does enrich the friendship. Because I always think to this very day, while my uncle and my mom are no longer with us, how could that relationship have really been if he got the help I think he needed? Because I think he was suffering. But because of stigma, never happened. How would my mom have been? Because she was generally, unfortunately, depressed. And how would that relationship have been if she, Tara, like your friend, was able to, you know, hold her truth and share it with people as opposed to keeping it in? And, you know, the communication could have, you know, with my mom was, you know, often crying, or, you know, sleeping, like that's what it was. And if she got the help that we so desperately wanted her to get, imagine how that relationship, this is what I think every day, could have been much richer. But I really do think because of stigma, it stopped. It stopped short of really fulfilling its promise of what it could have been. That's what I think. So I'm really pleased to hear, not about perhaps what your friend is going through, obviously, but that, you know, it's a real privilege for someone to take that trust, that leap of trust, and say, listen, I'm going to hold this with you, and that they know you'll listen. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Tara and I have talked about vulnerability in relationships and how people are very reticent to be vulnerable. You know, they interpret it as lack of safety. They interpret it as, you know, breaking their own sense of personal pride, you know, whatever might come. But it's so important to, I mean, obviously we, you know, and we've talked about safely sharing vulnerability too, right? Especially with children and that kind of thing. But it's so important to be authentic in our relationships. If we're going through trouble, if we're, you know, if we're having personal concerns, it's so important to be able to share them with our loved ones, to share them with people that we care about in safe spaces. And you're absolutely right, Carolyn. It actually builds relationships because we all have hardships.
Yeah.
We all experience them, and we need to be real with each other. But I think that especially, and I saw that in my parents as well, mm-hmm. growing up, you know, and my parents were also not from this country. And so they came with their own cultural background, and that sense of pride was so, you know, pride superseded everything. And maybe it's because they were moving across the world and having to reestablish them in an unknown place where they felt that they were being mm-hmm. judged. And so they had to kind of pick themselves up and, you know, mm-hmm. everything is fine and we can carry on and we're going to be successful. But I remember how that sense of pride mm-hmm. really had a detrimental impact to them sometimes.
Yeah. And to your point, Vicky, I also am building upon that because I can completely understand and resonate, you know, a family coming from another country and emigrating, let's say, to Canada. You know, I think for a lot of people, there was an unwritten social playbook, socialization playbook or blueprint, as you would say, perhaps, you know, I talk about this now, where one was expected to behave in a certain way. And, you know, there was respect, there was pride, like you say, there was, you know, we've got this, we're good, you know, we'll get through this. And I saw this growing up as well, very similar to what you're saying, you know, in terms of we're expected to sort of, you know, behave or play a certain role. In Italian, it's called figura, which is, you know, putting on the airs, everything's good. And anything outside of that, so any behaviors like that would perhaps demonstrate a mental health issue or a lack of respect were kind of shunned. Not kind of, they were shunned. People talked about it. And I also think that people were afraid to talk about it because there's always that fear, that vulnerability of being rejected. And people, I think humans just, there's a lot of things we're afraid of, like public speaking and death. But I also think rejection obviously makes the list as well. Because anytime we put something out there and people don't accept it and we get shunned or excluded, there's a cost to that. There's a human cost to that relationship. And so I think that social blueprint playbook, for lack of a better term, really did do a lot of damage. Certainly did not help give rise to conversations to destigmatize mental health. I'll say that much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even though things aren't exactly the same as that, you know, with the next generation, and that, mm-hmm. however, we are still holding on to some of that, you know, and I think that's what, you know, I'm going to take so much away from this conversation and thinking about. There was something you said so beautifully about gently stepping into those spaces, which was such a beautiful thing to say. And I think what's kind of really coming to mind is gently stepping into the spaces of finding ways with your two prongs about how we can gently invite people to be comfortable to share. And it can start with us, you know, because I think about that interaction this morning with my friend, and you know, obviously it was about her, but it also inspired me to think, actually, perhaps I could, you know, be a bit more open to share. And, you know, the ripple effects that we can have. And if we gently invite these conversations, then, you know, it can make a difference to how the next generation, you know, interact with each other, and the conversations, even though they are much better, but how we continue to enable these conversations to happen and that people feel safe to be able to talk openly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And to continue to, when someone does want to, you know, enter, create a space for that conversation mm-hmm. that they want to bring you in, Tara, I think it really is a beautiful thing because they trust. There's that vulnerability that we've been talking about, that they have that trust to be vulnerable and hold their truth with you, and they feel safe. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need to think about it in terms of that. We've traditionally thought, I think, about physical health. We'll go to a doctor or talk to people about, you know, quantifiable, you know, this is swollen or this part of my body is aching. So we don't really, there's not that much vulnerability necessarily, mm-hmm. Because people will, you know, oh, I know someone you can see, or you can go to the pharmacy and pick such and such up, and that might help you with the inflammation, or take that. Whereas with mental health, it's definitely more complex and complicated. But, you know, if we're willing to hold things lightly and non-judgmentally, there's a lot of growth that can happen and support for people who may be dealing with something, for sure.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, as you're talking about us feeling comfortable with talking about, oh, you know, here's ibuprofen for your leg, or here's, you know, you can take this for that or whatever. As I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, yes, and how important it is for us as well to acknowledge our own mental health and well-being, as you were saying before. Yeah. So we want to be able to acknowledge and validate other people's mental health and well-being in a verbal way, the way we do with other ailments. But we also want to be able to look within, because I think sometimes we might have a tendency to say, oh, yeah, I'm feeling this way, but it's okay, it'll pass. Right? Or I'm having these thoughts, but it's okay, it'll pass. Not that important, right? I don't really need to delve into that with myself. It might be too complicated if I do. So I'm just going to sort of carry on. So I think the same way that some people might avoid going to the doctor to check their elbow,
right?
You know, because they figure, oh, it'll get better. I think sometimes we say the same thing to ourselves about our mental health. And so that's an important piece of the equation. And I believe that that's what you were talking to before when you were speaking to the importance of self-care.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely, Vicky. Yeah, that's exactly what I was, you know, alluding to and referring to. And that I think people are just more comfortable in society. If there's a physical pain, that they will go to get it addressed or looked at or see a pharmacist. And there's not a lot of stigma, I think, not to sound like I've got all the answers, because goodness gracious, I don't. But, you know, that's something they will easily broach with somebody. But the mental health, there may be work to think about, or some counseling or resources to access. And that is a different thing, you know, when we're talking about supporting mental health. But to take care of oneself first, and that it's okay to do so, is a step that I think a lot more people are talking about these days, and in terms of supporting each other. So it's a mind shift of really just bringing that to the forefront. It's okay. It's okay. And, you know, we can get you resources, we can connect you with someone, and it's doing the work. Just like, for example, I might have to go to physiotherapy twice a month, right, for a physical ailment, or massage therapy or something to that effect. It would be akin to, you know, reaching out to a mental health resource, like a social worker, a psychotherapist, to really work through the crux of what's going on, and having those folks around you who will support that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that really kind of adds to what you were saying earlier about, you know, it can be something small as well. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always have to be, if people, you know, aren't comfortable maybe reaching out for talking therapies or things like that, that things like mindfulness, breath work, you know, that nature, that these things will make a difference to your mental health. You know, that I think this is what's really wonderful, that there are so many conversations and so many about these alternatives that people can access.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, this conversation has just been wonderful, Carolyn, and I could keep talking to you for hours, and hope that we get to have another opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you.
But I suppose, we'd just be really curious to ask you, what would be your sort of final message to our listeners that could, I'm just going to leave it open for you to decide what that might be about.
Oh, such great questions this morning. I'm so glad I had a couple of espressos. This is great. Okay. So a key thing, just to sort of a parting statement or sharing, would be that, we've always had mental health. It's just coming to the surface now in a lot of countries. In some countries, it's still not something talked about. And I'm fully aware of that. Just to be aware of what your needs are at a very, very personal level, to take care of yourself mentally And whatever that might look like, there's no right or wrong. And, you know, to, if you feel like, you know, someone needs support, someone is approaching you, they need support, or you would like to support, just to hold that space lightly. And that, you know, we're not here to give answers or provide cliches or advice that maybe we heard or read about in a book, but just to listen and to let someone know, you know, I'm here for you. I may not have all the answers. I may not even understand what you went through. But I'm in your corner. Just know I'm always in your corner. And if there's anything else I can do, know that you can lean on me and that I'll be here to listen. And I think that's a really, you know, strong thing to say to someone, because, you know, it's definitely not rejection, and you're welcoming the continued conversation, and they know they're not going to be judged, which in the past, I can't say that my uncle experienced that. And that's what brings me full circle to share that statement. So yeah, it's a great question.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you both. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm going to take with me that micro moment of joy every day,
that glimmer.
I'm going to remember that, Carolyn, and I'm going to, you know, indulge myself in that micro moment every day. Because I think we need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for the conversation today. I think that you've brought to us a real teaching on mental health and well-being. And you've reminded us to step up with ourselves and to step up with others. People are hurting, and we want to be there. We want to be there to support. We want to be allies, right? We want to be allies rather than to continue the string of stigma that we see so frequently in society, both historically and in current day. That's just a little bit of my thinking. Thanks, Carolyn. And over to you, Tara.
Yes, I mean, there's so much. I think I said resonate about 10 times. But yeah, I think what I really take away, which does mean a huge amount to me about how we interact with people, whether we know them or whether we don't, but, you know, that we gently step into spaces. You know, I think that's so powerful, you know, really highlights the importance of care, of compassion, of tenderness, you know, in our interactions and in our responses. And also, you know, what I really take away from everything that you shared is be open to share and to be open to receive. So thank you.
Thank you both. It has been a real pleasure and a privilege to be on this podcast with you both. I really love the conversation. You're both amazing women, and I'm hoping maybe at another juncture we're able to reconnect again. But thank you so much once more.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.